We're a few days out of it now, Greg Wyshynski, but happy belated wedding. Do people say that? Happy belated wedding, happy belated marriage? You've almost made it through a week. Congratulations.
I think belated congratulations.
Okay, that's how
although Ruby would probably argue that it is a belated wedding too, because we waited like over a year to get married. But that's Manhattan for you. Like, we had to wait to get the venue we wanted.
I was pissed I couldn't go, couldn't get out of work. But everyone who was texting me saying, "Why aren't you here?" I appreciate it, and I would have loved to have been there. Give us as much as you can, and maybe as much as you remember. I'm not sure what type of wedding it was. What were the hits? Give me the highlights. Give me the highlight reel.
Well, we had it at Brooklyn Winery, which was a lot of fun because it's just this beautiful rustic space in Williamsburg. They actually make wine on site. And, you know, it was an interesting wedding in the sense that, like, we had a DJ, and the DJ spun cool tunes, but...
Did you pick them?
Yeah, we okay. did, but the way the wedding was set up, it was interesting because... We had like a photo booth near where the dessert was. Mm-hmm. So everybody kind of congregated there to do funny photo booth things and eat donuts and cake. And then we had another room where the dinner was, and that was sort of left empty. And what happened was all the like moms and dads and grandmas and uncles like crowded around the dance floor to mingle and watched like my daughter and her cousin dance. And it was a weird dynamic because we never, like, all the people that would normally dance at a wedding never reclaimed the dance floor because of it.
Really?
They didn't want to dance in front of grandpa.
That's hilarious.
They won't get crunk and twerky in front of grandpa.
Now, listen, I'm a huge fan of Ruby. I think I told you this the first time I met her. I'm like, dude, you better wrap this up. Wrap this one up fast, dude, because she's outstanding. Now, for those that that don't know Ruby or don't know your past, considering, how shall we refer to it as, the aesthetic imbalance syndrome, perhaps that might be one way of saying it. Can you tell all the listeners, tell everyone the story of how you saved her life by pulling her out of that burning car, and for that she agreed to marry you. So can you,
I don't know
can
what,
you tell
I,
that
I,
story?
Well, that's the story I use as a cover story for the voodoo curse I placed on her, where she had to marry me or else she would descend into the depths of hell. No, she's the best.
She's awesome.
Everybody who meets me and her tells me how far I'm punching up. So
whatever, man.
You did it.
Good for you.
I thought I looked good in my tux though. Like, she looked amazing in her dress, but I thought I bought a tux, which is an interesting thing.
Whoa! Why would you buy a tux?
I bought a tux because I don't have anything really tailored, and I have a really
of all things
for the wedding, and then I'll wait.
When are you gonna wear it? Come on, get lost. When are you gonna wear a tux again?
Oh, I'm gonna be like Miss Havisham. Like, I'm wearing it now. I'm just like, I'm always gonna wear a tux, but I don't have anything tailored, and my body is sort of like, despite not having any athletic ability and being a terrible skater, like I kind of have like a hockey body. Like, I got a little bit of a gadunk-a-dunk back there.
Yeah.
Got big thighs, big muscular thighs. Nothing really fits me all that well. So I wanted to get like a tailored tux. So I got like, I got like a Daniel Craig James Bond tux. I got like a midnight blue, black lapel. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is to answer your question. If I ever go to Monte Carlo,
I was going to say,
wear the tux again.
You know who buys tuxes? Guys that know that they're going to end up in divorce court in a couple of weeks and they're going to get married again.
Or people that fancy themselves as jet setters as well.
Okay.
But you're right though. Like, I'm going to try to wear it to like a steakhouse, right?
Oh,
and I'm gonna walk out feeling so just woefully pimped. Overdressed.
Whatever, just pimped. Just wear it like Burger King or Taco Bell. Start wearing it around casually. Start a new trend.
If you wear your tux to places you're not supposed to wear it, if you see that in the wild, right? If you're at like the Keg and you see a guy in a tux, you either are gonna assume that he's going to a social function
or he's been somewhere.
Or he's insane. Right?
It's kind of like, it's not like a suit, because a suit, you can never go wrong as a guy wearing a suit, because no one ever says, why is that guy wearing a suit?
Right. You're classy.
But it's like, in any situation, like, you can be anywhere. Like, I've always defaulted to just wearing it. Like, in any social, like, well, I'm going to this party, what should I wear? Oh, I'm going to go to this event. Ah, it's work. It's not. You can never go wrong just wearing a suit, dummy. Just put it on. It doesn't have to have a tie. If you have a tie, well, bonus fries. But you can never, but a tux is different. Because a tux is like a suit for assholes. to, I'm going to put something on to make you really understand how much I'm getting dressed up.
If I was ever on NBCSN to do, like, intermission stuff, I'd probably wear the tux.
You have to wear a tux.
Okay, you have to wear it. That'd be my gimmick.
Dude, next time you're doing regional with us, like Dan Murphy from Canucks game says, hey, man, watch on for the intermission. Make sure you wear the tux. That could be your thing. The tux. Oh, it's Greg. The guy wears the tux. Oh, yeah, people of power and influence in the hockey news. Once again, there he is in the top 100. Oh, yeah, he's the guy in the tux.
They're like, why are you wearing a tux? I'm like, you guys all think I don't belong here, so I'm completely overcompensated.
Just totally go like, way, way.
Cherry will have the loud jackets, and I'll just wear a tux everywhere.
Classic look. Okay, now I'm on. If you're going to wear it like that, if you're going to treat it, if you're going to turn it into a bit, then I'm with you on it. But if you just bought it because you want something tailored, get a suit.
Yeah, I probably could have done that. But it's a damn fine looking tux. I look good in it. I dropped maybe like 7 or 8 pounds before the wedding. I was at a good decent weight, but in full disclosure, I've fallen off the wagon since then.
It was
like all the pizza, like 1 a.m. I've been avoiding. Yeah, it has been consumed. Went to bar trivia last night.
Ah, that's a killer.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. My favorite bar trivia. Actually, I used to play bar trivia too. This is years. God, it's like mid to late 90s. I was just like, surprise, surprise, single. And I was drinking this local Irish pub, and they started this bar trivia league all around the city. So I joined the team. Made the team. We had to try out. Do you have to try out for your bar trivia team?
No, you just show up and play. That's interesting.
We had
tryouts.
Yeah, we had tryouts. I remember speaking of, expanding your ass, doing bar trivia. There was this one guy, I can't remember, he might have been Brunswick, who would just you'd hate playing against him because he'd starched everyone. And you swear he knew the questions beforehand. And this one killer question was like semifinal, and it came down to him. And the question was, what does statio pigis mean? And he's got this cool older Irish guy, right? And we're all just like, well, good luck. And he thinks about it for a second, pauses, and says, is it the fat ass? And sure enough, Sadio Pidgeus is someone that's ample. And he won it on that one.
Well,
so listen, I've always associated bar trivia with the term Sadio Pidgeus.
You're a very sweet man for congratulating us. Just to put in perspective how momentous this wedding was, one of the few times that Puck Daddy went dark. Because all the writers, Puck Daddy was dark because all the stars were at my wedding.
Oh, you're just praying. Okay, let me ask you this then.
Yeah.
Because I know you as an editor. So no. You would have a totem pole of if something huge happens.
No. No, who
was going to do the story?
I told Yahoo that it was.
No. Who was going to do the story?
No one was going to do it. It was dark.
Wayne Gretzky announces he's coming back to the NHL and has signed a 1-year contract with the Los Angeles Kings.
Saturday morning, we'll break it down.
Good Lord.
We'll add some analysis.
I don't believe that.
No one's gonna do anything. And honestly, dude, like Monday was such an amazing day because, as you know, it hadn't exactly been the best week here in the States. Got married. The entire weekend didn't do a lick of work. Didn't watch a second of hockey. Didn't do a lick of work. Monday,
how'd that feel?
New bride, like. No, completely recharged, like ready to take on the world on Monday. It was so fun. And then, half the league got hurt. So it's like
Hall, no. Stamkos, Rene, Helm, Gaudreau, Murray last night. What are you talking about?
Since we last joined you, the entire league was injured.
Since we last joined you, the NHL now has a body count tab on NHL.com.
But it's just interesting because, like, in our business, we rarely get that opportunity outside of, like, a vacation. To just check out, right? And so
that's where you and I are different. That's where you and I are different. I never take a vacation during the hockey season. I shouldn't say. I did once when TJ was born, our first. And I took a week off to England.
I try not. I mean, I take a little trip maybe in the spring, not too big. But, I'm taking the honeymoon at the end of the month. Well, that's a symptom of having gone to Rio in the World Cup and losing all that time I would have otherwise maybe been on vacation this summer.
Suck it up, Buttercup. Just put your nose down. Put your head down.
I'm going at a time like after Thanksgiving and before the holidays that I feel like it's going to be safe. I think it's going to be safe haven for like gigantic
hockey news. Kitten, do you need a little break, sweetie? Aw.
Yeah, I do.
Let's start. You're right, man. Everyone's getting God, and the Stamkos thing.
Let's start with Stamkos.
That Nemestikov-Kucherov line, too, with him was just singing. Nesterov, like, maybe the more, obviously, the more underrated player, the way that he drives to the net and opens up passing lanes for those other two. Very quietly, one of the most effective players on that team. That sucks.
And his Stamkos' passing chemistry with Kucherov was becoming, like, astoundingly good. Like, as good as we thought the triplets were, like, those guys seemed to have some sonar work, and that was just amazing. I mean, just ridiculously good passing. Yeah, it sucks. Four months is the minimum, according to both Joe Smith and Bob McKenzie. The only thing that you're hopeful for is that Stamkos does have Wolverine-like healing powers. So, I mean, he could be back by, like, February. But 4 months seems to be the generally assumed minimum for the type of injury and the type of surgery he's having. Mm. That sucks. And I'll tell you something right now, man. Like, I think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are an astoundingly good team.
They're still the best in the East for me.
They're still the best in the division. I'll give you
East.
That. I don't know about
East.
The East. This is big, though, man. This is a huge loss. The Saint losing Stamkos to a blood clot in April.
I know, but they've done
this
it before.
This league Stamkos for the majority of the season.
They have done. Like, this isn't exactly virgin territory. They've done this before.
It's not.
They've lost Stamkos before, and there's plenty still up front. Like, it's listen, there's no way around it. It sucks if you're the Lightning. It sucks if you're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan. But, I mean, really, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches up there anyway, to begin with.
It is. This is true. Taylor Hall's out for a month. The Devils won their first game in the post-Taylor Hall era in overtime against Dallas.
That sucks. Right. That sucks, too.
That sucks, you know too, what? But I think they'll be okay because they have Corey Schneider, so they'll be all right.
And you know who else they have who I can't stop watching when he plays is Johan Ovitu.
Yeah, right?
Here's the thing about this guy to me. Normally, Finnish defenseman, won defenseman of the year last year in Finland. He's legit from France, so he's, one of two players in the NHL, all due respect to the Quebecois, who can say, I'm the legit Frenchman in this league. You expect guys like that to join the NHL, he's a little bit older, to join the NHL and just kind of be happy to go along with the ride a little bit and just happy to be there a little bit. Hey, I'm playing in the NHL. As I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, this is his first time in the United States. Like, he's never been over here before.
Right.
And not only is he not just happy to be aboard, watch him. He's making plays. Like, Ovitu makes plays. Like, how many times do you see that out of a guy who's from a different country, who's never been here in a league he's only watched highlights of, either on television or YouTube, in a league that is as fast as it's ever been? Guy's making plays.
Yeah, I know.
I'm with Ovitu, man.
So Hall out, Stamkos out. Who was the other one yesterday that went out?
Well, Johnny Gaudreau.
Gaudreau with the broken. Now, did you think that that was a blind spot for player safety, that maybe the stall slash should have been rung up now that there was a significant injury? Or is this just something that happens in a game and we shouldn't suspend everything that results in an injury?
Well, you know what happened last night?
Uh-oh.
In the Pittsburgh Penguins, Washington Capitals game, Sidney Crosby got a penalty for slashing. It was a tap on the gloves. Mm-hmm. Elliot and Doug mentioned this on Hockey Central last night. I think they're right. Elliot's going to join us here in a couple of minutes as well. I think this is going to be a spot where the NHL says, okay, enough.
With slashes?
To the hands.
Yeah.
Just like those little stick taps. They're on the hands, and they have been for a long time. We've kind of looked the other way on them. But ask any player, man, those things hurt.
They do.
Man, those things hurt. And can break digits.
Quite injurious, yes.
Yeah, and this is one day after. Okay, this is good. This is the next day after Gaudreau, and it's Sidney frickin' Crosby. They sit down. Like, to my knowledge, we'll ask Elliot. I don't know that an email went out saying, "Heads up, guys, we're cracking down on stick taps of the gloves." But referees aren't dumb. Like, no. You see what's happening. You can read the tea leaves. Okay, this is going to be bad, right? So we should maybe have a second look at these things and start sitting someone down. And then you just know. That I can't remember who the officials were in last night's Pittsburgh-Washington game, but it's Crosby who does it first, and you're like, oh shit, do we have to call him? does it have to be him who sits down first? As we know that we're getting grilled here on the glove checks. Damn it!
Right,
all the players, why him? Just can't it be Tom Wilson?
Sucks about Gaudreau. It's interesting. I don't know how you felt about this, but I think this is a safe space to say it. So there were about a billion tweets yesterday about Gaudreau out, and Hall out and Stamkos out. And then they would all include, and Darren Helm too. Man, what a day in the NHL. I'm just like, wait a second. One of these things is not like the other.
I know. This, well, legit, he's out.
It's like, oh, Darren Helm too? Oh, my God.
We started with Eichel this year, and that was bad. And, oh, man.
It's not to say that he hasn't played well. Like, he's played on a line with Nyquist. They've been, like, Nyquist has been pretty good this year.
But, and Vanek.
But still, though, you know, it's like, yeah.
Everybody's a human being, Greg. You need to remember that. These aren't just table hockey pieces put back in the box at the end of the game.
I know. That's true.
You know, Pekka Rinne, Jonathan Quick. I mean, there's a lot. This is no good. We should ask Elliot about the idea of protecting, with all due respect, Darren Helm, protecting the star player. Because in the NHL, we've always had that, oh, well, it's a tough game. Keep showing up out there, guys. Where other sports have gone out of their way to make sure that stars are protected. Ignore the hypocrisy. We don't care. We're keeping our big boys on the ice. We're keeping our big boys in the game.
Specifically, you're talking about the NFL and the way they overprotect quarterbacks.
Is basketball the same way, though, too?
I mean, they can be, sure, but it's thinking about specifically
football is the big one.
The inherently violent sports that you can compare the NHL to.
Yeah.
For sure. What did you think of some of the GM stuff this week? Specifically the Oshie/Taves rule in the shootout.
This is all stuff that's going to be tabled for later, right? This general manager's meeting is the general manager meeting that sets the table for what they're going to talk about in the spring.
That's right.
I'm of two minds because I love the Merrick Malik goal. When's Merrick Malik going to get out there and take a penalty shot?
That's right.
If you have that TJ Oshie, Jonathan Taves rule. But then I understand the flip side of it, too. Just give me the frickin' stars. Yeah. You know what? Just play the hits.
But the thing about it, though, and it's interesting in that regard that they use kind of TJ Oshie as the pivot point for this rule is it's not always going to be the stars. In many cases, it's going to be TJ Oshie, Franz Nielsen. It's going to be a shootout star versus it being like Jonathan Taves.
Great point.
If you have a specialist,
yep,
you're
great
use
point.
That
yeah,
specialist.
You're not going to see Jágr. You're not going to see Jágr in Florida. That's a good point, Greg. That is a really good point.
But that could be okay, though.
So you'd rather just force a Sedin to do it? Like, all right,
that's
dummy.
Yeah.
All right, you two, you're up next. Well, you know we're really bad at this. You know this isn't our game. Get out there.
Henrik skates in by himself and then passes to the boards.
Just that's right. Or Derek Dorsett comes in and dumps it in the corner. What? It's my game. It's my game. Come on.
What the hell do you make out of the Canucks, by the way? Like, it seems like the wheels have really come off in the last week since we did the show.
It's awful, and you trace it all the way back. I just go to HockeyDB and trace back the drafts going to 2005. Mm-hmm. Here's the scary thing for me. If you're the Vancouver Canucks, if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, here's what would frighten me. There is a feeling from above, like even above Trevor Linden. There is a feeling at the Aquilini level that this needs to be fixed right now.
Right, which is insane. Like, I don't why didn't Toronto make the world safe for total scorched earth rebuild and knowing that the fans aren't going to abandon you? Like, I don't understand why that lesson hasn't been learned by another Canadian team.
Because they've already started to see attrition in the stands.
Yeah, right? But the only way you're going to reverse course is if you can't throw a Band-Aid on this.
I get it. Like, and one of the stupidest things you could do right now is move Bo Horvat. But who do you think teams are calling about?
Him, Tanev.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Like,
few pieces they have.
Like, Pennywise, pound foolish. I can understand if you're an owner. Because these guys, like in their other businesses, you know, they live quarter to quarter. They don't think. This idea that we have a five-year plan in business. Like, who now in corporate culture has a five-year plan? You choose the share price every quarter. That's what you do.
Guys who want to save their asses for 5 years.
That's it, right?
Usually it's people. I think you can get away with a five-year plan in business if the place is in absolute disrepair, bordering on the doors being shut.
Yeah.
Then you might be able to come in and be like, we've got 5 years to fix this, boys. It's much different.
My favorite version of that vibe, Greg, in hockey is, well, you really don't know a defenseman until he's 26. said the general manager who wants to buy himself some time on this defenseman who may have been a dud that he picked up in the draft. Just because we've said it for so long.
You leave Adam Larson out of this. He's a fine addition to the Edmonton Oilers. He's done everything they've asked him to.
We'll get to Edmonton. I think whether Vancouver wants to or not, they're bottoming out. Like, they can have an explicit, plan to bottom out and, you know, start fishing for Nolan Patrick and Timothy Liljegren and these types of players in the draft. Mm-hmm. Or they can say that they're doing it, or they can just whisper internally that they're doing it. Either way, they're doing it.
Yeah.
Like right now. Like, oh, how come they don't tear it down? They don't have to tear it down. It's bad enough as it is right now. This is heading to Nolan Patrick territory and fast. Mm-hmm. The only thing, the interesting thing about it is the Maple Leaf model and previous to that, the Chicago model, the Pittsburgh model. It's funny because all those come along with a failed Minnesota and failed Columbus model, which was the exact same model, but nonetheless. The Toronto model at least gave you hope.
Right.
Right? Because you're seeing something happen. Like, there needs to be, like, and this may ultimately play poorly for Willie Desjardins, but doing nothing, which may get you the desired result, which is Nolan Patrick, doesn't do anything for your fan base. But if you start taking pieces off the chessboard or moving them around, it makes it look like you're being proactive and you're actively doing something and you can sell hope.
It's like when I used to fake a math test and get the answer from the back of the book,
yeah,
and then just like make a bunch of scribbles to make it look like I've been busy.
Sorry, motherfucker, coffee. Sorry about that. That's good. I almost did a Don Knotts all over the mic there. That's good. Oh, that's a good one. That's a nice analogy. Yeah, well, what do you make of Vancouver? I mean, they're headed there whether they want to say, you know, we're burning the building and it's pitchforks and peasants at the castle gate.
But could they head? Listen, I am a fan of a team called the New York Jets. It is a team that isn't in a perpetual state of denial about its own reality of its own surroundings.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if they bring in Tony Romo next year to continue to try to put a Band-Aid on the problem.
Yeah.
So I believe that there are owners that refuse to do, to put it in wrestling parlance,
the job.
And right now they got to do the job. That's the issue.
If you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, I mean, listen, realize where this team is at. And I think most Canucks fans are eyes open wide about what this team is and where they're at. The only time that fear sets in is when you start to hear that they're looking to move a player like Horvat, move a player like you mentioned Tanev, Brock Besser, Thatcher Demko, these types of players, like players ticketed for the future for Vancouver. At that point, you say to yourself, pump the brakes. That's when it gets scary. But right now, just a bad team.
Right.
Just a bad team, you know. And Kari Lehtinen, you know, may be their MVP because he may have delayed the inevitable for a couple of more days by being awful last Sunday. It's terrible.
That's
terrible.
I love
one
of my favorite things about this podcast is the malleable nature of the MVP. When put in your hands, like
Carey
Price MVP for being hurt, the MVP
for
making a team look better than it is.
Yeah.
So who do we owe a bigger apology to right now, me and you? The New York Rangers or John Tortorella? Who gets the bigger apology from us so far?
I don't think either, because I'm not. I was saying this on Brian Compton's podcast the other day. Enjoy it while it's here. But no one thinks for a second that every Ranger is going to continue to shoot at 20% all season long. They're fun getting there. They move the puck quick. It's a good time. It's a good time. But 5-on-5, Michael Grabner's a 25% player shooting. Ooh, I don't know, Greg Wyshynski.
Yeah, and he's always been kind of streaky McStreakerson anyway. But like, I think the one thing that you can say about both of these teams, okay, in the positive and in the sustainable side, would be that the Rangers have four lines, and they're actually four lines. They're not like three lines and two.
Oh, you're right about that.
They've adopted the Mike Sullivan philosophy, the Jim Rutherford's philosophy, and they're doing a lot of penguin-y things this year. And I included in that is the fact that despite not having a bevy of puck moving defensemen, they just get the puck out of there quickly.
But that's forwards. That's forwards still doing hits.
That's forwards doing a lot of work.
That shows up in February.
That might not be sustainable.
That shows up later on when your legs are falling off.
That might not be sustainable.
throughout the entire year. But the thing to think about doing penguin-y things, the Rangers are doing all the penguin-y things before the Penguins did it to win the Stanley Cup. Like when that left side was, you know, Hagelin and Kreider and all, like they were still doing that little area pass in front and making foot races. We talked about this countless times. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the Penguins are doing it and like they've revolutionized the NHL. No, the Rangers are doing that before. That to me is part of what the new NHL is just is not making passes to a player, but putting it in the area and making a race or B a battle.
Right.
And playing
exactly.
And playing percentages.
Exactly. Exactly. The Blue Jackets have a hell of a rookie.
Blue Jackets have a hell of a power play.
A hell of a power play too. Yeah, they're a bit better than but again, like you said, I mean, you talk about unsustainable. I mean, a power play is probably the greatest example of that in the NHL.
Was it the 77 Habs that had the 34% power play, the best I think in the history of the NHL? Maybe the 81 Islanders were similar. Like you don't have that.
No, you don't.
Like that team had like LaFleur and Schutt and Lemaire and Robinson. This one's got like Atkinson and Foligno and Saad. Like,
and like, I hate to say this because I don't want to believe that certain players are injury prone, but some of them are. Like,
they are.
Stamkos, maybe. Lupul would be another example. Lupul's more like freaky shit happening all the time. But Sergei Bobrovsky's got a .933 save percentage right now. He's 8-4-1. But do we expect him to not get hurt at some point this season? At which point the Blue Jackets will fade?
Yeah,
because he's a guy that does. You know, my confidence in his dependability, health wise, has dropped significantly in the last 2 years.
I don't disagree with you. Yeah, but you can't sort of base your entire evaluation on, well, we think this guy's going to get injured.
But I'll tell you, man, 8-4-2 plus 14 goal differential is a hell of a start for them.
Mm-hmm.
For a team whose coach, you know, we all thought couldn't coach after the World Cup.
God, Zakarensky's good.
But Zakarensky's good. So let's hit on that real quick before Freeze joins us, because we do have a question from Kim Possible right now.
Oh, I do.
Can Zakarensky win the Calder even though he doesn't play in the Great White North?
For sure.
And Austin Matthews. Now, I don't buy this concept that I've seen here and there about a player in Columbus being unable to win the Calder. Because Steve Mason is why. But I will say that defensemen have to be exceptional, especially offensively, to win the Calder.
Yes.
And I think Werenski can be. The problem is you've got a kid in Winnipeg leading the league in goals right now. And that's going to be an amazingly high bar to clear if you're Zach Werenski. If Patrick Laine is top five in goals, leads rookies in goals.
Oh,
like
it's
top five in NHL
sure,
goals.
For
forget
sure,
it. It's
for sure.
in the bag.
For sure. And I still think that Austin Matthews is going to be there by the end of the season, because it's not as if he's not getting his chances.
Oh, I don't know, Merrick. You know, the current narrative is that Austin Matthews is mired in a massive slump.
Oh, God, please. I just my eyeballs have, like, rolled to the back of my head listening to that here in Toronto. Trust me. If he wasn't getting his chances, I'd be right on board. If he wasn't getting in a situation to bury chances, I'd be right on board. But he still is.
Yeah, of course he is. It's just, you know, occasionally you go through these things, especially when the rest of the kids on the team are also going to kind of go through the same thing as well.
Hey, you know who's a streaky scorer? Everybody in the history of the NHL. whether it's Bossy, whether it's Lemieux, like everybody. Every goal scorer in the history of the NHL is streaky.
That Sidney Crosby is a streaking scorer in the sense that at the beginning of last year, they were basically writing his obituary, and then he came back and...
It was like in, what was it, like 72nd place in the scoring race when they made the coaching change last year. Bah! Yeah,
to donuts. Line A wins Calder, by the way.
Right now, yeah, right now you're voting. Yeah, it's Line A and Werenski's your runner-up. But I don't know, though. I almost said what Werenski's doing is more impressive. But Jesus Christ, is Laine fill in the net.
Please keep in mind, by the way, if you want an outlier in this race, there is a certain gentleman in Pittsburgh with rookie eligibility this year.
Dun, 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 dun.
Who until last night was putting up insane numbers. I guess we should touch on that last night. What to make of that loss for the Penguins last night?
Write it off.
Snowball down the hill?
Just write it off.
Yeah.
Those are easy, man. The Habs get Starch 10-0. Write it off. I think who do the Penguins have next? They get a dose of the Islanders or the Sabres next.
Something like that, yeah.
So that might just be what they need. Well, dose of the Islanders, correct that.
That was a fun effort from the Capitals. Nicky Backstrom 5 points last night.
Yeah.
Good line chemistry with Oshie. Good stuff.
I think that if you go back to that draft, I think Backstrom's leading all those players in points. Am I wrong about that? I think that includes Kessel. Am I wrong
He's
on that
one?
He's
an exceptionally great player on both ends of the ice who has inexplicably escaped the ire of people looking for scapegoats in the postseason because he is – look at the numbers. Mm. Folks, yeah. Look at the numbers. Check the numbers. Mm. He's as much of a culprit as Semin was as far as – postseason disappearance.
Yeah, fun game last night. Fun game to watch. And listen, if it's just the Penguins always sticking it to the Caps, no fun. You need a game like that to keep that rivalry going. Perfect for rivalry night. A good pace thing.
Did you happen to see the sign that one of the fans bought to the game last night that we featured on Puck Daddy today?
Oh, I missed that. No.
Oh yeah.
What's
the Capital
sign?
Fan.
What's the
right
sign?
In the 100 level.
Give it to me.
Big old sign that said, "Grab him in the Crosby."
Oh Jesus.
And the greatest
2008 all over again.
The greatest compliment that could be paid to someone who made that sign, grab him in the Crosby, was that it was a Flyers fan who sent me an email to alert me to its existence.
Of course,
and a Flyers fan who doffed his cap to the creativity of the Capitals fan.
Oh my!
For the innuendo, that's the highest compliment that could be paid. And we're talking about a Flyers fan base that just comes to games with signs with Crosby's picture, an equal sign, and then a cat.
Yeah.
So it's just like...
It's really raising the level of discussion. Dr. Darwin, we'll see you now.
I read a bit in Friege's last 30 Thoughts about Fleury and the idea that there's obviously a market for him, but they're not looking to deal him yet. Like there's a number of teams that could obviously use Marc-Andre Fleury at this juncture in the season. I'm just wondering when they're gonna have to pull the cord at some point on him.
Not necessarily. They might not lose him in the draft. Depends what kind of side deals you make out of all this. That to me is gonna be the fascinating thing about Las
Vegas.
Oh
yeah. Right?
What are those side deals? Hey, don't touch our guy. I'll give you this.
The side deals, not only with teams, but as was noted, and I think it was a Pierre LeBrun piece this weekend, the side deals cut with UFAs as well.
Yeah.
By George McPhee. I'm of the mind that this team's going to be good, by the way. My other podcasting husband, Dave Lozo, disagrees. He thinks that Vegas is going to be ass in their first year, but I think Vegas comes out of the expansion draft with a pretty solid blue line, two really good goalies, and then you fill in the blanks. And the fill in the blanks part is going to come down to how many guys you can convince to join up the Vegas thing, not only from a family, lifestyle, great place to live perspective, and McPhee thinks he has a selling point there, but from a you're not going to be on the craptacular expansion teams that you know and love from the last 20 years.
Yeah.
You're going to be on the Minnesota Wild.
You know what I've always wondered, and more so now that Las Vegas is getting a team, what's it like to raise a family there? Because all I have about Las Vegas, and I've been there 4 or 5 times, all I have from Las Vegas is my 3-day trips there, like everybody else, and stereotypes. But that's just part of Vegas, right?
Right.
Like, if you're asking a player to go there, mm-hmm. and they are going to raise a family there, kids in school, we're married, putting down roots, what are you selling? Like, what
you're selling?
What,
you're selling
what
this.
Is it like? I have it, honestly, it is, I don't, from anything other than a party point of view, I'm mm-hmm. clueless about Vegas.
Let me tell you what it's like. It's you know, it's a desert. There are suburbs. There are lots of swimming pools, and it is cheap to live there. Housing prices are affordable. Cost of living is down. It's kind of a quiet place if you get it. I mean, listen, it's just like the people that, you know I live in Manhattan. You're like, oh, what do you do? Climb the Empire State Building every weekend? No, of course not. It's like people in Vegas don't go to the Strip every weekend. It's for the tourists. Yeah. You know, it's a place to live, and like, but it's like the biggest selling point legitimately is the cost of living there is ridiculously low for people. And it's apparently a decent place to raise a family too. Like they like McPhee told me, he thinks that he didn't know about it. He had the same thing you had. Like he's, you know, was in Washington forever and then.
Just know the films that I've seen.
Right. And exactly. Right? He's going to, you know, walk out in the desert and all of a sudden, you know, Warren Beatty's there trying to sell him a casino. But
this this looks awesome. Wait, I'm not 25-year-old Jeff again.
Right. No, he says that from a raising the family perspective, that is a market that people are going to have to learn about. There has to be there's a learning curve there for UFAs, but it's one that he thinks he can sell them on. So I think when it comes to the team, like, pluck the fourth best defenseman from every team. You're going to have a pretty good blue line. They're going to have two really good goalies, obviously. And that's the biggest thing that the NHL did here with the expansion draft to game it for Vegas is we all know you need a goalie if you're an expansion team that's worth his salt. They're going to get one. They're going to get something really good.
And they may get the first overall pick. They may get Nolan Patrick.
See, I wish that wasn't a possibility, to be honest with you. I hate that, actually.
Listen, the goal of this team is to not embarrass itself.
I know, but I don't like the idea of some newbie coming in and getting a shot at the first pick. In previous drafts,
in previous
non-lottery drafts, because they invented the lottery because Sid came in and they didn't want Sid going to like an undesirable place. In previous drafts before that, they were given the second overall pick.
I get it. Like it's different. We all know that. There's plenty of McLean always talks about this on Hockey Central. Like, oh yeah, that's lovely. Oh yeah, great. Okay, they get a shot at first overall. Listen, man, they have Kelly McCrimmon there, who's his former coach and general manager. He knows Nolan Patrick very well. I'm just assuming Nolan Patrick's going to be number one by the end of the year, and all indications are that he should be once he gets over this injury, whatever it may be. As the team is very secretive about this, they call it upper body, but does upper begin at the hips or does upper begin at the knees? I honestly don't mind. Like, you've paid a lot of – dude, they paid $500 million. $500 million should at least get you a chance.
That's going to get him a bunch of really good players.
A bunch of really good players so they don't embarrass themselves. They'll give us something we can market.
Well, they're going to have a name by the time we do our next podcast.
That's a good point. They will have a name.
Now, according to what I've seen as far as where the wind's blowing on this, it sounds like we're going to have some Desert Knights potentially.
Desert Knights?
I cannot say for certain, but the color scheme would indicate that silver may not necessarily be the most prominent color.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially. I can't say for sure, though. I really respect the fact this hasn't been leaked yet.
I want the surprise. Like, to the point where I don't want to look at Twitter that day. Don't want to answer texts. Don't want to look at my iPhone.
We're going to do PVR it and watch it at home. Hey, like I said, PVR. Like a real Canadian.
Not DVR. Yeah, PVR. That's right, buddy.
Yeah, I'm trying to learn as much as I can.
It's because you're coming up here now that Trump's the president. You're going to have to come up here. Don't worry, buddy.
He's going to register me as a Ukrainian and put me in the Ukrainian camp. Get the hell out of here.
Well, you know what? He is kind of chummy with Putin, so you know, that's a little hostile towards Ukrainians.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I think I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to finally have put something in the headline besides Las Vegas NHL team, because that really does take up a lot of real estate in the headline.
I know.
And plus new gear to buy. Oh God, I love fresh gear. it's one of the only reasons I want the World Cup of Hockey to continue is because I know we'll get cool new jerseys every couple of years.
I was so happy. I took TJ to the Nashville game the other day in Toronto, the Preds Leafs game. And I was so thrilled to see so many kids there in Team North America gear.
Oh.
Toques and hats and jerseys still littered all over the ACC.
Hey.
So, you were there. What do you think? Isn't that cool? Yeah, he's grunting. He's getting Elliot on the phone.
Hey, listen, bud. I have to tell you something as well. It's for big kids, too. I wore my Team North America jersey to
your wedding.
To the Islanders Lightning game on Monday.
Perfect. Still be a fan.
That's right. TNA wasn't just a team. It was an experience. It was a way of life.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about it the way we talk about Taro Tsujimoto for years and years. Our guest is standing by, Wish.
Joining us now on the line, everybody's favorite hockey insider and a face that you see a lot on Sportsnet, especially on the weekends, Elliot Friedman is here. Hi, Elliot.
Hi, guys. That was the greatest introduction I've ever received, I have to say. Yeah.
You say that on every one of these radio interviews that you do. I hear them all. It's all BS.
No. I think the different kind of inflection you gave with your voice kind of added to this one, I would say. Wish.
Oh,
congratulations
oh,
on being the happily married Greg Wyshynski.
Thank you very much, Elliot Friedman. I really appreciate it. And Elliot sent me dropped me a little note this weekend, which was nice.
Nice.
And thank you, sir. It was a lovely time. I wish both of you could have been there, but I think
but
you
we
probably
weren't
made.
Invited. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I think you probably made the right decision to not come to the States last week. It was not a good place to be.
Yeah.
Stay where you're safe.
And if we're air checking, Elliot, the term you're looking for Greg's intro was sing-songy. A little too sing-songy, bringing Elliot on there. You might want to scale that back a little bit. We were talking about all the injuries in the NHL right now, from starting with Eichel and going right to Johnny Gaudreau to kick off the show today. And I thought you and Doug really nailed it last night when you were talking about Johnny Gaudreau and bringing up the Sidney Crosby example in the Pens-Caps game, and whether or not there's been a directive to now crack down on the taps to the glove. Is that the next, in your estimation, Elliot, is that the next area of attack for officials? That little glove tap now is going to go the way of the dodo bird.
Well, the one thing I did check last night, Jeff, was if there was a directive sent out. Was there something where they said, after what happened yesterday, do we have to monitor this? And I was told no. I was told there wasn't. But, you heard what Doug said on the air, that if you're a referee, it's impossible for you not to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And I think privately, the Calgary Flames were infuriated about the fact that they specifically said, can we do something about this? Our player is legitimately going to get hurt here. And then it did happen.
The fact
that they went to the officials and Glenn Gullison said after the second period and said, look, our guy's taking a lot of wax. Can we get a call here to let them know that this has got to stop? And it didn't happen and he got hurt. I think if you're a referee, you don't want that to be tagged to your name.
Yeah.
So I think all of the officials saw this and said, not on my watch.
Further to Johnny Gaudreau specifically, when it happened, I got a text from an ex-player who just wrote two things, Warrior gloves. Now, Johnny Gaudreau switched to Warrior, and this ex-player in question said to me, he wore, and this is not a knock, I don't want to come out and slander Warrior, but just from experience, this one player said to me, I had an injury to one of my fingers as well. The gloves are really comfy, but when you bend it to grab your stick, there's a little bit that's exposed around the knuckle. And it's really tricky to get that spot, but if you do hit it, it's A, painful, and B, perhaps injurious. I wonder if at the end of all these discussions about want to get rid of the stick taps and the glove checks and all that, how much of the equipment, we talk about equipment with the goaltenders all the time, how much of the equipment manufacturers need to be part of this conversation if, in fact, we're going after glove taps now?
I think You guys remember, we're all old enough that when we were kids and we played hockey, your glove really extended
to your elbow,
up your wrist, close to your elbow. Now they don't want that. And I remember a few years ago, I think in the late 90s, that was an issue because we started seeing more wrist injuries, and not only slashes to the wrist, but skate cuts to the wrist and things like that.
Yeah.
And players were saying, you know what? I want less of that cut up to my elbow because I want to have more control of it.
Yeah.
And we saw injuries going up that way. There's right now, Jeff, there's a whole other thing going on between the equipment companies and the NHL. And a lot of that has to do with the delay that we're seeing in the new slimmer goaltender equipment. Dick's Sporting Goods the Sports Authority went out of business last summer. Mm-hmm. And that was devastating to the equipment companies and a major reason why they are behind on the goaltending stuff, because all of a sudden they're saying, we've got all of this inventory out there and you're telling us we have to change it. Kids aren't going to buy it. It's going to be unsold.
Yeah.
We're going to lose millions of dollars. And I just don't know how, when they're having already this kind of tug of war over the goaltending equipment, that they're going to be able to say, okay, now we're going to solve the glove problem too. These are not good days between the NHL and its equipment manufacturers.
Yeah, exactly. A very good point about the sudden lack of options to sell this stuff through to the consumers. It's affected both Canada and the U.S. All right, let's talk about the big old bombshell that dropped yesterday, which is the NHL anteing up Olympic participation to its players in exchange for a 3-year extension on the collective bargaining agreement. And I got to tell you, in calling around yesterday after this broke, the sense I get is that the players are incensed that the NHL decided to do this after all this noise for the last year of will we or won't we, and what the IOC has to do, and oh my God, we don't even know if we want to shut down our season, to then say, oh, but it can be a bargaining chip for CBA negotiations, was pretty much an insult to them.
You know, I don't think that way, Greg, and maybe because I'm not in the middle of it. But, you know, I mean, I've been covering sports now for 25 years almost. Everything's a negotiation. If you look at the history of the NHL and the NHLPA now, since, you know, 1992, when we saw the first stoppage, and that was sort of the one just before the playoffs, I think that's what we've learned covering hockey. You know, anytime the league or the players want something, as you know, the NHL and NHL want something, it's okay, well, if you want that, what are we going to get? And it goes both ways. I mean, maybe the players would be upset because the relationship hasn't always been very good, and I understand that. But I think if you cover sports now, everything's a negotiation. Everything works out that way. I'm not surprised that this happened. As a matter of fact, it makes perfect sense to me as to why things have been kind of unfolding the way they were in Olympic participation. But I think now, if you're a player or you're an owner or you're an executive in the NHLPA or you're an executive in the NHL, what we've learned over the past 20 years is that everything is a negotiation between these two guys. And that's just the way it is. And maybe they're upset, but unfortunately, I think it's just par for the course.
And at the same time, though, too, I think, and I don't disagree with you, and that was certainly clear from the PA's point of view under Bob Goodenow, where every tiny little thing, as you know quite well, Elliot, was a negotiation. The NHL could barely move without having to get at the negotiating table with Bob Goodenow. But at the other hand, too, it's not just a negotiation, but don't you have to know when the other side is bluffing? Like the NHL, I firmly believe, really doesn't care about Pyeongchang, but they care about Beijing. Like they don't care about these Olympics, but they care about the ones afterwards. They want to tap in to that market.
But is
this not a place where the PA can say, you know what, guys, this shouldn't be a negotiation. We shouldn't be having a negotiation for this one, knowing that if there's no this one, there's no Beijing. Is this not a case where the players could play hardball and say, we're going to see if you're bluffing or not?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what you do in a negotiation, right? First of all, you never take the first offer.
Right.
So I look at what the NHL did as, and I wrote this last night, I looked at what the NHL did as, okay, this is our first offer. Let's see where this goes. And, you know, if I'm the players, I say, okay, let's make a counteroffer and let's see where this goes. And that's exactly what I look at. And the only thing I will disagree with what you said there is that I'm not, like, everybody assumes if you don't go to South Korea, you're not going to China. No one knows that for sure. Like, a lot can happen in, how many, 6 years? I mean, we could all be hit by buses. Like, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen in 6 years. The other thing, too, is part of me is convinced that the NHL is taking a bit of a gamble here by saying, if we don't go to South Korea, will that hurt the Olympics? Will they look at it and say, you know what? Our hockey tournament was not as good, so we want these guys back. The other thing is, Russia wanted the hockey players there. South Korea, I'm not sure they care as much if the hockey players are going to be there. But does China, you know, does China look at it and say, you know, how do they feel? Do they want the best hockey players there? Because a lot of the things got done in 2014 because Russia wanted this to happen. And we're also not counting the biggest of all wild cards. And this is the one we don't know. What happens if the NHL doesn't go and all the players say, okay, we're going? Like what happens?
Well, there's one in Washington who will and has always threatened it.
Yeah. And how many people feel the same way? Mm-hmm. And what does that, like, does that mean, like, what does the NHL say that means for contracts? What if he gets injured? I mean, I don't know any of this stuff, but, you know, I mean, there's so many unknowns, particularly that one. I think that this is all a negotiation to see how we're going to get there. That's what I think this is.
Do you think that there's value for the PA to accept a 3-year extension on the CBA? In a the devil that you don't know sense, as far as what could come out of a negotiation with the NHL in 2020?
Well, you know, yes, I think there is a reason to accept it, but I think the thing is that, look, if I'm a player or I'm an agent, I'm saying, if you want me to accept it, I think we should talk about capping escrow.
Yes. For those who don't know, that's the system in the NBA. The NBA has a 10% cap on escrow. Anything above it, they take 1% out of, I think it's post-playing days earnings or something like that is what they take it out of. But they have a cap of 10% on escrow versus the NHL, which is, it's linked, it's elastic, it could be upwards of 17%.
Yeah, so, like, that's what I'm coming back with. Like, okay, if you want that, well, can we have this? And let's see where it goes. I would assume the NHL would say no to that, but you can't shoot a guy for trying, right? So, I mean, like, the other thing, too, is I was talking about this with someone this morning. Look, every time there's a lockout, there could be a lockout, there is one, okay? If I was a player, this is what I would say to my agent or the PA. I would say, if I was to say yes to this offer, what's the benefit? Okay? Even if I don't get a cap on escrow. If I was a player and I think, you have to assume that if the CBA ends, you're looking at, what, losing half a season? So is there any financial value to me as saying I'll take 3 more years rather than losing half a season's pay? Now, the answer might be no, but I'm at least asking the question. I'm going back at the league right now as a player, and I'm saying, you know, I'm willing to consider it, but what's in it for me beyond just going to the Olympics? Because I think the players are sitting there saying, we think we're going to go, so I'm not gaining anything if I say yes to that. If you make me want me to say yes, what's my gain?
The other thing too, Elliot, is that it seems like in this next one, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the owners kind of have a system they like right now, and that there is more players, this is the stuff we want to get fixed, than there is stuff on the ownership side saying, this is what needs to be fixed in the system.
Well, I think, sometimes I think we assume that. First of all, you have to assume by the fact that the league is making this offer, that the owners do like the deal. And some people say, oh, that's a bad thing. It shows how the players are getting screwed. I don't agree with that. I don't think there's any time you make a deal, you always run the risk that one side's going to like it better than the other. And if I was an owner, I would like this deal. So I can't blame them for saying, I'll take 3 more years of it. However, you know, I think, you know, I just look at this and I say, I understand if I was a player why why I would hate certain aspects of this deal. But the other thing you always know is now is that if you go into a negotiation with these guys, and some of these guys are real sharks, this is their game. This is what they try to win at in life. They like to win negotiations. So if you let them try to take a piece out of you, they're going to take a piece out of you, or at least try to do it. That's the way business goes. I know if I'm going to enter into a serious negotiation over my contract with my bosses, they are going to try to do whatever they can to win that negotiation. That's the risk you run. And so I think you – now, the one thing that's different here, guys, is that Major League Baseball is about to do a new CBA without a work stoppage again. The NBA is about to get a new CBA without a work stoppage for the first time in a long time. I wonder if in any way the NHL looks at this and says, if these guys can do this and these guys can do this, at a certain point, we're going to have to be able to do it. I don't know the answer to that question, but as a fan of hockey, God, I hope so.
You know what? You and I talked about this the other day, Elliot, and I think it's a really interesting point because it does speak to the difference between perhaps what the owners want and what Gary Bettman wants. Because I think for the ego of the commissioner, you want to be able to put on your resume, was able to do a deal without shutting down part of or an entire season somewhere along the way. Somewhere along the line, where I think the majority of owners will say, well, we have the recipe, we have the formula, you squeeze them till January, then you make the best possible deal, and mm-hmm. we're off and running. Is that not a split between what the ownership group would want and what the commissioner would want?
You know, I think it all comes down to what kind of deal you think you're going to get, right? I don't know the answer to that question because I'm sure there are owners. I don't think it's that black and white, Jeff. Mm-hmm. I think there are owners who would like it if there was no labor stoppage. I really do. I think there are some who would. There are some who are like, no, let's go. Let's raise the earth. Let's win this, and we'll do whatever it takes to win. And there's other guys, I'm sure, who look at it and say, you know what? This is bad for me in my market. Or this is bad for me because I make plenty of money, and let's go. Like, there were owners last time in 2013 who said we didn't go far enough. And there were owners who felt, you know what, I've had enough of this. Let's drop the puck because the money we lost, we're never going to make that back. I don't think it's fair to say that it's one owner who feels that way or all owners who feel that way and the commissioner feels something different. I think if you were to go market to market, and also business attitude to business attitude. There are some owners, they love negotiating, and they love winning negotiating. And sometimes, like I had one guy tell me in that whole thing, there's this one guy, and he was very wealthy, but he battled for every penny because he loved to battle for every penny. Yeah. So you never know what you're going to get. And players are like that, too. Like, some players, they go for a salary and they say, hey, I'll take a bit less because I want the team to win. And there are players who are like, no, you know what? I'm worth this, and that is my number, and I'm not going any less than my number. And I've learned over the years from doing negotiations, you think logically that there's a position that works, and there's somebody on the other side who's like, nope, this is my principle. And that may be your way of thinking, but it's not my way of thinking.
Great stuff, Elliot. You are, once again, making us smarter than we have any right to be with your insight.
Yeah, I don't know what I just said. I hope it was good.
It's a lot of smart words. All together, too, in the right order.
All right, dude. It's our pleasure, as always. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Reach.
We'll talk to you on the line.
All right, guys. Take care.
What do you think? What do you think they should do? Three extra years or... head back to the table. Because I think that the NBA CBA is going to put some wind in the players' sails because part of the other, yeah. I'm writing about this on Puck Daddy today. Another facet of it is that they're going to redefine what basketball-related revenue is. In the words of one source to TheRinger.com, they've found some extra money in the couch cushions as far as what they haven't been receiving from the NBA. So it's going to be a very player-friendly thing. But the problem with comparing the NHL to the NBA when it comes to labor is, one, the NHL pie, hell of a lot smaller.
That's it. The market is that much bigger.
But also, the dynamics of the NHL pie, insofar as a lot of that pie being baked in Canada, are completely different. Because the reason escrow exists, I mean, there's a lot of reasons it exists, but one of the reasons why it exists is because of the fluctuation of the Canadian dollar.
Well, the reason it exists is because of linkage.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're linked at this percentage, and so if we go over that, we're getting our money back, thank you very much.
Right.
Unless we can find a creative way to go around it. I mean, I'm conflicted because obviously you have to declare, you know, a conflict, because this is my livelihood. Mm-hmm. Right? Do I think that, you know, do I think the players should accept this? Yeah. Do I think the owner should accept it? Well, yes, too. Keep it on the ice. So I can stay employed, and as a fan, I can still watch hockey. But I do understand, and you know, the players that I talk to always come back to the one same thing that sticks in their craw. And they don't want to hear that, you know, when I say, oh, you guys negotiated, too bad. You dealt with, you know, deal with it. And that's escrow.
Uh-huh.
They can't stand it.
Hate it.
Think about it this way. And I know Dan Ellis got, you know, destroyed on Twitter for mentioning, you know, his salary and how he's struggling, even though he's $1 million player. I mean, right off the top, in a lot of markets, you're getting 50% taken off for taxes. 50% right away. Boom. Gonzo. And then you're paying an extra, as you mentioned, at times 17%.
That you may or may not get back.
May or may not get back. And chances are now you ain't getting it back. That is an insane amount of money to lose right off the hop. And that's coming from someone in Canada who's taxed at that level. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I look at my pay stub every 2 weeks, I go, oh, man. I cry. Like, I'm just like, Claire, don't let me look at this.
Well,
here,
listen,
just deal with it yourself.
If you like the way things are going, do you have reality shows in Canada? Because I've found that they can be effective candidates for change.
No, I'm familiar. Yeah, I know. What, I think one, you know, Jim for Living should run for PM against Trudeau next time around.
Winner, yeah. One question from the listeners before we head out, because I think it's a pretty salient one. Paul wants to know, why haven't the Islanders fired Capuano and or Snow yet, and is there a coach out there that's worth going after?
There are coaches that are worth going after. I mean, Travis Green was one that everybody sort of circled the wagons on in the summer.
Former Islander.
Former Islander as well. And I don't know that Vancouver would let him talk to anybody right now, considering what may or may not happen with their head coach, either sometime this year or maybe, you know, to kick off next season. It's a horrible thing to say, but it's the reality of the business.
It certainly is.
Again, it comes down to what you think the Islanders' problem is. Coaching or composition. And you could probably make a stronger case for composition than coaching.
At this point, you could, because of the Okposo and Nielsen departures and the lack of filling those roles.
Yeah.
I mean, Ladd's not been good. But I also feel like, increasingly, now that I've seen this team a lot in the last couple of years, that it's almost like Snow's building a different team than the one Capuano wants to coach. Like, it's hard to imagine that Garth Snow is building a team in which Cal Clutterbuck should be on the first line.
With Josh Bailey.
But that
goes to the big question, too. What's going on with John Tavares? Because this is not, as many people may want to position it, this is not Steven Stamkos. Because Steven Stamkos, you know, part of his decision was, this is a team that still has Stanley Cup aspirations with me and my prime right now. You know, John Tavares is in his prime as a hockey player, right? We've allegedly built this whole thing around John Tavares. I mean, what have you built?
Yeah. I have a
hard time the lure to go somewhere else, you know, Montreal, New York Rangers, wherever, is pretty strong.
Oh, bite your tongue. Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't think you would go to the Rangers, but I could see Montreal. I don't think Toronto, but I could see Montreal.
I don't think John Ledecky being a new owner is going to make any dramatic changes in season. I think that's the issue with Snow. I can't imagine Ledecky's going to fire the general manager in season, but I could definitely see changes happening after the season.
Capuano's a different situation. I feel like, you know, he is, as far as NHL coaches go, we've talked about it before, he's past his expiration date as far as like how long these guys usually stay in one place. It wouldn't surprise me to see him get fired in a shake it up kind of way, but I really believe, and this has come sort of into focus in the last week, Snow's going to make a trade before he fires his coach.
Well,
that's the first shoe to drop, I think.
What's sort of industry practice? You know, before you fire a coach, you owe him a trade to try to shake it up so he can save his job.
Right.
The only question is, does Gar Snow get to do that? We're looking at one or two firings.
I think you're looking at one, because I a double firing for a team that, I mean, that happens. That happens.
Oh, it's seldom.
It also happens after the season, and
yeah,
you know, like Shero and Bylsma, for example, like it happens after.
But then that goes,
your fate's been sealed.
But then that goes right up to Ledecky too. If he's not going to be your guy long term, do you let him make a coaching change?
Well, that's a good point.
If Snow's not going to be your guy, like if you made up your mind that that's it. This is where this has led us. You know, we've had this Ferrari in John Tavares, and this is where we're at right now. And if you've made that decision, rightfully or wrongly, that this is not your guy, how do you let him pick another coach?
That's a good point. And that makes you think that it would be an interim coach, if anything, right?
Correct.
Versus something.
Correct.
Yeah.
If that's the move.
Stuff.
It's bad on the island right now.
It's not a good place right now.
Haven't even talked about the ice. Jeez.
At least their concerns. All right. Thanks to Elliot Friedman. Thanks to Sam, our producer. Thanks to you, Jeffrey.
You better thank Ruby quick.
Thank you, Ruby.
Her at the end of every podcast, dude. You better thank her every day.
I do thank her every day for being her. We'll talk to you guys soon. So there you go. Enjoy hockey tonight.
10 games.
10 games.
Got a little reprieve. Caught your breath yesterday. Back at it. Hockey Thursday.
All right, dude. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Bye.